Oops, I have my phone on. Look at that, failing already. Sorry, I get the volume on my phone. All right, great way to start the show. So we are back with Shut Up and Grind. This is episode number 288. So I did take a 6 month absence because I was building up my gym, this new gym I'm working at. So those of you that follow me on my Facebook and Instagram pages, you've seen the videos and all the pictures and things that I've been posting about that experience. And in just a few short months, we are rocking and rolling over there. So now I can bring my attention back to sharing stories from guests from all over the world. I've had guests from well over 50 plus countries, 6 different continents. And it's all about overcoming obstacles, defying the odds, and helping you clear whatever's blocking your path to the success that you want in this lifetime. So today we're going to be talking about supporting men through divorce. But before we dive in, we're live on a couple of my Facebook pages. So if you can, please hit that like and share button. It's all about helping the community grow, because you never know whose stories can help someone who needs to hear it at the right time. So helping me have this discussion is Jared Circle. So he sent me a friend request on Facebook. I kind of stalked him a little to see, like, why did he pick me? And then, you know, we started chatting a little bit back and forth, and it seems we have a good amount in common. So I'm going to bring him on now. Welcome, Jared.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. So give us some little bit of background about yourself.
Okay, so I'm kind of new into the divorce support world. My background is actually in gym management and ownership, kind of like you're working in now. Okay. I worked as a martial arts studio owner for about 20 years. And about 2.5 years ago, I went through a process of divorce from my, I've been in the same relationship since I was 16 years old. So trying to reacclimate a lot of things in that also came with me stepping out of studio management and ownership. Now, martial arts is still a part of my life, but it's no longer my profession. So over the course of the time in which I was teaching, I started to realize that a lot of the value that my clients were getting out of the instruction that I was giving wasn't necessarily the fighting skills. You know, you get that confidence from that, but you know, how often do you have to use something like that? So I started to like refine my instructional method to lean more towards like personal development, towards leadership development, towards skills that they could use and apply on a day-to-day basis. So it was a natural transition for me coming out of studio ownership to move into life coaching. And from there, I kind of fell in with the group that I'm working with now. It's called OCI. And they ask individuals to really look at like what their life experiences brings to the table. Like what skill sets have I developed in my life that would allow me to offer the most value to my clients. And having put those two things together, you know, my background in martial arts and then like, you know, my experiences with divorce and how those two things kind of came together, and I was able to successfully transition through that very difficult time. I feel like I've got a lot of value and I really want to, you know, give back, especially to men going through those experiences.
Oh, man, we can talk so much about this topic because I did the exact same thing. Like almost the exact same path, just with the exception of divorce. Mine was just overcoming obstacles, overcoming trauma. And it was the same thing. Like I didn't want to just get pigeonholed into fitness. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just know that the principles that I help people go through to lose weight, to run faster, to build muscle, you know, there's a commitment in there. And it takes that same level of commitment to get through the challenges of life. So I did the same thing. I wanted to splice the two. And I'm constantly giving, like, I'm a track and field coach also. And I'm constantly giving life lessons to the kids and, you know, equating my fitness trainings into everyday life. So that way it's just bigger than the number on the scale.
Yeah, it was a transitional point for me was I was sitting in a martial arts business owner's workshop. And a guy by the name of Mike Perella.
I know him.
Yeah, Mike's a great guy. Yeah. He's sitting up on stage and he's like, look, man, if you're here, you're not a martial artist. Okay. Martial artist is a guy with a heavy bag in his garage and some sign hanging on the wall. So you're a business owner and you have a responsibility to your clients. It can't be just about you and your training. And, you know, a lot of the things that I had taken personally from my practice were kind of intrinsically, kind of like naturally blending themselves into my teaching. But that was a transitional point for me where I realized like, hey, look, you know, yeah, this is just a template. Okay. What I'm using here to help people is just a overlap. You know, I got to look at like what the core is and what I can give people. And, you know, that's what kind of led to that transition for me.
Well, I love how you, how you said this is a template. Like when I'm working with people, I tell them constantly, you already have what it is you want, like within your wheelhouse. You know, so for example, there's a woman that I trained. She's been training with me for 8 years. She hates her job. Like all 8 years, I've listened to her complain about hating her job. And so finally I was like, well, what is it that you want to be doing? I was like, she's certified now, but like she would cover classes for me if I was ever in a pinch. Cause again, she's taking classes with me for so long. Mm-hmm. She knows enough to not let someone get hurt. And so she's like, I would really like to get into fitness because she's lost 80 pounds and she wants to help people, you know, because she understands that mindset of being that much overweight. And she wants to get into it. I said, so do it. And she's like, but it's tough. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it's absolutely not. Like, figure out who you want to work with. I was like, finish your certification. This was a couple months ago. Yeah. I said, we have two gyms right next to each other. I said, we have space right here. Right, so get some PT insurance and start marketing. I'm like, it's that easy. And then once you grow, because I started in my garage, and the same thing. And then once you grow enough to replace your income, now you're free. It's like, because right now you spent almost a decade of your life hating what you do.
Yeah.
And so what do you have to lose by at least trying?
Yeah, you only get really one shot at this, you know. And I don't want to spend 10 years of my life, you know, doing something that doesn't bring me passion, doesn't fill me with joy. So, you know, when I transitioned into coaching, really fit nicely with what I wanted to do. And a lot of the long hours of studio management, which I'm sure you're familiar with,
yes.
You know, yeah, I had young kids and it just takes away a lot of that. And, you know, that was a bargain that I had to strike. But that's one of the things I learned about myself in going through my divorce and, you know, reevaluating my work life versus my family life. This provides me a lot more flexibility and I still get to do the things I care about and I still get to be there for the people I care about too. So it's been a win for me.
Awesome. All right. So take us through your divorce and what did you go through that led you to want to support other men?
So that's kind of a twofold question. I'll tackle the first part first. As I mentioned, I was in the same relationship since I had been in high school. You know, my ex and I dated for about 7 years before we got married in 2005. Yeah. And then we were together until 2021. So we had a 20-year history together. And obviously over that time period, you start to develop a lot of overlap and you get into a lot of familiarity. We had a lot of mutual friends and, you know, from my estimation, from the outside looking in, we had kind of that like quintessential, like high school romance turned into, you know, married with children kind of thing. You know, it's difficult for me to describe the details of what led to that precipitous event that kind of terminated our relationship without feeling like I'm casting a negative light on parties involved. So I'm just going to go with like things culminated. You know, there were some decisions that were made that I just could no longer, you know, tolerate, couldn't sustain those things as a part of my relationship. So I made a conscious decision to step away and move out of that relationship. That was not an easy thing for me to do. And this is kind of what I get into with my clients is the first thing is clarity. You have to understand like where you are and what you want. And we reached a point where, you know, what she wanted in terms of the relationships in her life and, you know, what I was willing to tolerate as far as my personal boundaries, they didn't reconcile. So from there, we had the beginnings of a fairly amicable disillusion. But, you know, over the course of, you know, that process, we did end up finalizing through the process of disillusion, but the conflict kind of escalated over the period of time in which we were working through that. And, you know, it turned into a lot worse of a situation than either one of us initially hoped for. Now, in hindsight, you know, in retrospect, it's easy to see where I lost some of that focus and I lost some of that clarity. There's a lot of emotional turmoil, a lot of trauma associated with that. And, you know, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it's something to the effect of abnormal circumstances resulting in abnormal behavior is normal. And that's Viktor Frankl. And it's like, hey, man, when things are weird, you might behave a little strange. And, you know, I'm guilty of that, too. And I can own my part in it. And that's one of the things that I want to help my clients avoid is get clear and then help them make decisions on how to put themselves in the best position to actualize you know, what their goals are through a structured approach. So that served me well. And, you know, I'm hoping to be able to impart that and, you know, provide some structure for men too, who are going through a very difficult time where things can seem erratic.
See, and so two big takeaways there, where you said that you weren't going to put down the other party, which is huge, because there's a different divorced men's group on Facebook that I'm a part of, and all they do is trash their exes. You know, there's no good that can come of that. Right. You know, it's like, and at the end of the day, especially if you have kids with that person, like, that's still the mother of your children. And especially if you're saying things like that in front of the children, you're almost like insulting half of them. And I think that's one big thing that either party has to be aware of when you're talking about what you went through. Because I do the same thing. Like, I'll talk about what I went through, but like, you don't have to bash the other person, you know. And I tell a lot more of where I went wrong, you know, versus where she went wrong. Because obviously, it takes two people to dissolve a marriage, and sitting there and looking inward is huge. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to touch one thing on that. And I think that a lot of that represents kind of like a victimhood mentality. You know, she did this to me, right? And there's no empowerment there. Like, if it just happened to you, then you were just a victim and it's like getting hit by a car. Well, I mean, you still stepped into the road, but, you know, whatever. The whole point is like, you know, lightning struck, whatever. The whole point is, like, if you don't take ownership, how are you going to make any adjustments? How are you going to have any control over that outcome? So, you know, it's important to recognize that there are always two parties, and no, you can never really control what the other person is doing, but you need to be able to take responsibility for your part. And ultimately, what that does is lead to you being able to make decisions to do better. So that's a big part of it.
So when clients come to you, what's the number one thing that they're looking for?
It just depends on where they are in the process of divorce. I mean, if they're in that immediacy, like, I just found out yesterday, a lot of it is just how to manage that emotional turmoil. You know, like, there's all kinds of metaphors and parallels that you can draw. But at the end of the day, like, when you lose your foundational mapping, and I'm going to try to stay, because I can get very technical with this stuff. So I try to stay like a little bit, the way that your process, your mind processes information on a day-to-day basis is based off the way that you map the world, okay? Your expectations and then how they're met. And when your expectations get shaken really hard, like, let's say your family, your marital unit dissolves, the way your brain processes that information gets totally rewired. And you need to be flexible with that kind of thing, but your mind just is not ready. It's not prepared. It takes time to rebuild that muscle. It's like taking an injury in your athletic training. You can compensate and limp across the finish line, but that's not peak performance. So we try to, like, help people understand what's going on with their bodies, their minds, and get them to, you know, take the time that they need to process those emotions. And then if they're in that immediate stage, try to help them, like, you know, pump the brakes, get some clarity, you know, allow yourself to feel those feelings, and then try to get yourself into a good position to move forward. So that's how I deal with clients kind of in that phase. If I meet somebody and they're a little further down the road, you know, they've got a little bit more emotional stability, their brain, their neural plasticity has kind of re-solidified back into where they can process incoming stimuli and they know how to handle things well. I try to get them back on track with establishing a framework so that they can look at where their goals are and what steps they need to take in a measured process so they can evaluate whether or not they're getting the results they want. So,
okay. How would you define emotional intelligence?
Your capacity to understand accurately what emotions you're feeling, rather than just saying, you know, I feel bad. Okay, well, let's fine tune that a little bit. I'm sad. Or, okay, so now let's fine tune that a little bit more. You know, the better labels that you can put on the actual emotions that you're feeling helps you to process them and understand when those things come back up. Hey, this is the state that I'm in. This is how I tend to respond in that state, and then make either good decisions if that's your track record, or maybe reevaluate and shift a little bit if you have a tendency to make bad decisions in that state.
Solid response. Yeah, because like dealing with any type of life's conflicts requires, you know, emotional intelligence. And it's very easy to let the negative emotions consume you. It's very, very easy. It actually takes discipline to stare those struggles in the face and remain calm, remain neutral, remain level-headed, and a word you used a couple of times, stay focused. And yeah. So when you meet men who are at the negative end of emotional intelligence, how do you help them see the light?
There are a couple things that we can do. Most important part of my job is being a good listener, right? So when I hear people, and if they use some of that language that kind of reflects a level of emotional intelligence that we want to try to develop, I'll ask them to pause and clarify, hey, what do you mean when you say bad? What do you mean when you say depressed? What do you mean when you say angry? You know, let's clarify those emotions a little bit. Let's identify what we're dealing with. And then we can take things forward from that position. So that's a really good strategy. There's a lot of research that's been done on, you know, how to apply that. And, you know, I get a lot of leverage out of asking leading questions and just giving my clients a chance to talk. You know, there are other things that you can do, but I find that to be the most effective technique.
Yeah, and I find a lot of people join the gym post or while they're going through divorce. I mean, men and women, but like I worked with a man last year. Like he would just come into the gym and he just, like you could just tell it was just consuming him. The whole process was just consuming him. And I was like, I need you to take that energy and crush this workout. Yeah. And like just put everything into this workout. And then at the end of the workout, he's always like, yeah, you know, I feel a lot better. Because yeah. If not, that energy stores. And then eventually you're going to reach the breaking point. And the idea is to not reach the breaking point because that's when bad stuff happens.
Yeah, that mind-body connection is a real thing, you know? Yes. And, you know, you can do things proactively, you know, with your body just to kind of help you release that energy. And, you know, I had been doing a little bit of CrossFit for about 6 months prior to the onset of my separation. And I really found that during that time, like when I was, you know, processing those emotions for myself, I really got into Olympic lifting. Just the, you know, the snatches, the clean and jerk, all those things. Number one, they're really like visceral. You know, they have a lot of compound movements and you just feel powerful when you're doing it. You can just blow off a lot of steam. So that part was great. But my background in martial arts, the styles that I taught were very specific, detail oriented, like how to position your body for like optimal performance. And, you know, the Olympic lifting parallels that really closely. So if you can just like make a small tweak, you can get big results. So, you know, very cognitive, very mind body. So it was an excellent tool for me during that time.
Awesome. All right. So talk about your Facebook group.
Well, it's just an opportunity for me to reach a wider audience instead of just addressing, you know, my individual client base, try to bring people into that group so that they have an opportunity to get exposure to some of the concepts. You know, if maybe this isn't the right phase in their life for them to be involved in one-on-one coaching, I still want to be able to give them something. I've been toying around with the idea of putting my mind down on paper and putting a book out for people, but I want a little bit more experience working with clients. I want to pull from some more real world events and you have some more case study examples before I start, you know, that process. And that was an advice point that I got from my mentor. She said, hey, man, you know, get some more traction, get some more case studies, get some more material that individuals whose circumstances might not necessarily parallel yours that they can relate to. So, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. And so what do you want the outcome of that book to be? Like, what do you want the takeaway to be?
Oh, the same thing I'm trying to do with the Facebook group. And that is just to kind of reach a wider audience with my system and to help people to get a sense for, hey, how can I handle this process? You know, how can I process all this trauma? You know, divorce is the second most traumatic thing that can happen to you in a lifetime. So it takes work. And unfortunately, a lot of people try to dial in and do it individually. So Facebook groups are a good resource, you know, to an extent. You know, peer support is definitely a valuable resource, but that's not one that you want to dip into really heavily because you can start to become a burden for those people as well. And that's never a good outcome for that relationship. You know, that being said, I do have a couple of stalwarts, a couple of people that I know I can rely on who've always been in my corner. And yeah, I think that you should have some people like that. But for the most part, it's good to just have an idea for what you're trying to do and have a system in place that can help you like work through it. And That's what I'm trying to advocate for, and that's what I try to give to my clients.
Okay, so you usually at one part on this show, I'd like the guest to speak directly to a person. All right, I want you to speak because a lot of men won't ask for help. So
Right.
they'll be going through this and they'll be feeling all kinds of ways inside, but society has conditioned us that if we ask for help, then somehow we're weak or we're not worthy or whatever. Like what would you say to someone who's feeling like that, who needs what you offer, but they're afraid to speak up out of fear of judgment?
I would counsel them that there's a definite strength in vulnerability. It takes a lot to be able to say, "Hey, you know what? I'm in a weak position and I need help." And we may look at that as, a statement of weakness, but the fact is we all go through those seasons. And if you try to like stay that course yourself, I'm a big fan of quotes, and one that I really like is smooth seas don't make strong sailors. And
Yes.
you're not going to be able to navigate that ship on your own either. So when the storm gets rough, you're going to want to pull in that support group that you need. And asking for help is a definite sign of vulnerability, but there's strength in that too. And the people who see you go through that, I mean, especially if you have kids, you don't want them growing up repeating that cycle. So it's important to show them who you are, both on the strong side, and then show them that vulnerability and overlap those things together and let them see that they are not separate entities, but rather part and parcel of the same thing. I'm going to go off on a little tangent here
No, go ahead.
because it really kind of resonated with me. One of my good friend Brad, who's the guy, one of my stalwarts, the guy I can always rely on. I do some work with him as he's trying to establish a new business, and so we get a lot of FaceTime. And he recommended the show The Boys from Amazon, and I don't know if you've seen any of that or not, but there's a great character in there, and he is that like epitome of strength. Like no signs of weakness, the real backbone support group for the team. And he's got a young daughter, right? And he's reticent to show her any level of vulnerability, and he has like a OCD, and he does have some things going on. And there's another guy in the group who encourages him, like, "Hey man, you're the best guy I know, but I also know that you're flawed. Go ahead and show your daughter both those things." And so that was really powerful. And having if you haven't been through that kind of experience personally, you might like kind of gloss right by that exchange in the show. But having been through it and being able to recognize the significance of what they're trying to get at there, and believe me, the show is not intended to have a great deal of depth. So it's just, it's just for fun. But that particular exchange is in the forefront of my mind because it's very recent that I saw it, and it provides a good overlay. So if anybody's listening to this who's seen that exchange, hopefully it'll help make that connection for them.
Yeah, that's great. Because again, there's plenty of what we'll call them safe spaces for women, and there's a lot of female advocates all over social media. But the men's rights advocates, they're out there, but they get so much hate. It's like, why can't we have rights? Like, why can't we have a place where we can come together and talk about how life is hurting us or treating us, or even share the good parts of it? It's like, I don't understand the stigma, but what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it can't be overstated. I mean, come on. I came up through the martial arts world where, like, it is very like, show no weakness, both on that like that physical side and on the emotional side, and on the mental side, everything is just like, how tough can you be? So, I mean, that was a big obstacle for me to overcome too. And I didn't necessarily lean into any particular support groups during that transition for myself, just subjecting myself to a lot of material and having an open mind. So the formative influences for me in that respect came from like the mentors I was pursuing and like, the reading materials that I went after. So, I mean, it's going to come to you from somewhere, hopefully. And I would definitely encourage people to have that open mind about it. I mean, you might be watching The Boys and see that scene and be like, "Hey, what? You know what? There it is. It is okay for me to step out and reach out and confide in a friend or seek out a support group." I think especially, I can't make this comparison. I don't necessarily know for sure, but I would say that, a lot of the mental health stigma has kind of dissipated since I came up. In the 80s, that was, I was you were going to see a shrink, right? But I'm an advocate for mental health. I think that, visiting with a therapist on a routine basis is just a great checkpoint. It's like going to the gym for your brain, going to your gym for your emotions. And it's something that everybody needs to be comfortable with doing. I can't say enough about, you know, how I wish that everybody could get to that point. But I agree with you that there is still a good deal of stigma associated with it, that idealization of the masculine male. But you need to never forego that part of yourself, but be willing to embrace your feminine side too, because we all have masculine and feminine energy.
See, I've done multiple podcast episodes, and I've been a guest on other mental health podcasts talking about vulnerability. And like the one thing I'll say about the men shouldn't cry, well, then why do we have tear ducts? You know, like when you think about it better that way, wherever you believe we came from gave us tear ducts, right? So right. If we weren't meant to cry, we wouldn't have them. And I found in my speaking world, I found that the talks that I give, because I have a couple tearjerkers in my wheelhouse. Like, you know, I watched my father pass away in 2019. My sister had a brain aneurysm burst in 2016. I donated a kidney to my other sister. So like there's a lot of stories that bring up the emotion. And I found on those ones where I do get a little choked up, those are the ones that are the most powerful. Yes. You know, 'cause people identify with pain. Right, people have gone through pain at some point in their life, and then when they see you, whether on stage live or on stage virtually, and you're letting that pain be displayed, people connect to you and to your message even stronger. You know, so for people not wanting to step into that, it's like you're actually cutting your story short. It's like people want to feel what you feel. So like when I talk about my dad passing from start to finish, I can't get through that whole story without choking up. If I'm talking bits and pieces, I'll be able to get through bits and pieces. But if I go through, like if I'm giving a 30-minute talk on dealing with post death, you know, like I can't, like the waterworks come. And I've just learned to accept it, and no one has ever bashed me for it. People come up and say, oh my God, that was so strong of you. Nobody ever says, this weak man up here crying. Like it doesn't happen. Like that's a myth that was put on us by society. But if you're a strong man and you actually let that emotion show, you're the strongest man in the room at that moment.
That's a great transition to what I was thinking about. And one of the principles that I try to practice in and coach my clients in is that having a degree of flexibility actually gives you more strength. If you can adjust to any type of circumstance around you, the person with the most degree of flexibility in an interchange is the person who has the greatest advantage. And if you can't allow yourself to like admit that you have those kind of pain points, then somebody who's able to recognize that and push those pain points is going to push you out of control of the situation. So it's important to be able to like, hey, you know what? Yes, this is a part of me. Yes, I can recognize it. And yes, I can deal with it. And that gives you that flexibility, the capacity to handle those types of interactions.
Absolutely. All right. So what's, well, I know you said you have a book coming, but is there anything else that's next for you?
I'm sorry. I don't quite follow.
No, what are you working on next, but besides your book?
Well, I'm always working on refining my process. I'm a big advocate for taking in new information and applying it to what I'm already working on. So I'm doing a lot of, actually right now, the research that I'm doing is studying Napoleon Hill, who was a speaker from the early 1900s. Yep. I like to look at that foundational stuff and then see like what I've read and been exposed to that's more modern that ties into that kind of stuff. And that really shows me where the real meat is, if that makes sense. You know, if he was saying it 100 years ago and they're saying it now, there's got to be some kind of validity to it. So I like to take those kind of concepts and kind of look at what I'm doing. Like, hey, how can my process benefit from bleeding these things into the book for myself and for my clients? So always researching. I'm really happy to be able to do this today. I look forward to being able to do some more speaking engagements, being able to get my message out there and share what I have to offer with people. And hopefully, you know, give them some tools to help them kind of mitigate the fallout of what they're going through and lead to some further empowerment. So right now, really focusing a lot on building up my Facebook group so I can do the outreach there, fine tuning my program through research and trying to improve my own personal process. And then just looking for anything and anything that allow me to get out in front of people.
All right. And what's the name of your Facebook group?
It is Happily Better After.
Happily Better After. I like it. All now, right. And so besides is, there, oh, sorry, go ahead.
It is a private and hidden group, and it is exclusively for, you know, I try to have like a filter. Like I look at what people are posting in groups, and if they're doing some of that misogynistic or anything like, I'm sorry, you know, that's not going to be it. So, you know, that's how kind of how we ended up together. I saw what you were doing, and like, hey, you know what? This looks like a good match for the message I'm trying to put out. So, if you were interested in joining the group and interested in getting access to some of that material, the best way to do so would be to private message me on Facebook.
Yeah, and I have the link to your Facebook page in the description. So that's good. All right, so give us some final words, and then we'll break it down.
Well, I would say that, you know, having been through one of the worst things that can happen to a person, say for the loss of a child, I would say that just remember that you are going through it, and the important thing is to not get stuck. Just like if you tear your ACL, and let's, you know, say you're a pro NFL tailback, and, you know, I'm sorry, maybe your career is over, but your life is not over. Your ability to contribute through your knowledge base, the things that you have experienced, it's not over. Instead, bring those things in, incorporate them, and then use that to strengthen your message. Use that to strengthen your goals. Use that to strengthen your mission, and never stop giving up on pursuing the things that give you passion. Every time I do a video, I always try to finish with, you know, be easy with yourself, do what inspires you, and if you need me for anything, I'm here to help. So those are the 2 points there are the main ones, like take it easy on yourself. I mean, bad things are going to happen. Good things are going to happen. Take your time and incorporate both of them. And then always do what inspires you. Try not to get stuck in that 8-year job that kind of like weighs you down all the time. Even if it's just a little bit at a time, you know, you got to do something that makes you happy. Yeah. And then the third element is, you know, I'm here to help. Try to have some people around you that, issue that call to you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Your tribe is definitely important. Yeah. But this was a solid talk, you know. Thank you for reaching out initially. And, you know, I'm glad I passed your vetting process. Yeah. And then, I do different types of shows throughout the year too. I'll do like all-star band. I do all-star panels. You know, I'll bring like multiple guests on, and we'll just tackle different topics. So if you're interested in that, I'll add you to the list.
Yeah, and I'd love to be a part of that.
And as I'm searching for a guest, I'll let you know. And then we'll go from there. Oh, Mr. Steve is on over here. Hold on one second. I have a thank you comment.
Hey, Steve. Says,
thank you both. You got it, sir. All right. So I will be seeing you shortly. Don't log out yet, though.
Yeah, no worries.
All right. Thanks again for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Robert.
All right. I got to tell you, it felt really good to be back. You know, I love doing this. I miss doing this. I love meeting the guests, hearing the guest stories, and I'm just so glad to be back. I'll probably be broadcasting from the gym, so I don't have to drive half an hour in between, you know, to do these shows. But Jared was a great first guest to have back, and I have a lot of other great ones for you, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing and talking to him again. So that's all I got for you. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next one.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up.